Hello and welcome to the Go Home Show podcast. I'm Michael Henson and joining me, as ever, is Chris Anderson as we review the Go Home Show for Halloween Havoc and AEW as they begin their number one contender tournament for the AEW World Championship. There's a lot of action, so let's get into it.
Yeah, I'm going to dive straight in with the AEW review. As we said, it was the round one of the men's heavyweight title tournaments. First up was Wardlow versus Jungle Boy. Now, I fully expected this to be a complete squash. However, it wasn't. It was actually a really competitive match. Whether or not that's a good thing is probably down to the individual, because Wardlow is a giant at 250-odd pounds, probably more. Jungle Boy is probably the exact opposite. So, in realistic terms, you'd expect this to be all Wardlow. But actually, they told a really good story of Wardlow being this big, slow, menacing monster and Jungle Boy just being too quick for a lot of the match. Every time Wardlow got close to hitting a big move, Jungle Boy would counter. In the end, though, Wardlow would win with not one, but two massive F10s. If you're not sure what an F10 is, it's an F5, but doubled. He yeets Jungle Boy firstly from the outside, then takes him back into the ring. Another big F10 for the win. This was a good match. It was enjoyable to watch. Like I said, in terms of a realistic sports product, which is what AEW promised us, you'd probably just have Wardlow winning this one easily because Jungle Boy is 130 pounds wet through. But also, it's fun to watch Jungle Boy get yeeted around. And actually, he's really good at controlling a match. This was very fun to watch. Next up, we had that Jon Moxley versus Eddie Kingston will be an I Quit match for the title at Full Gear. I'm very, very excited for this. The story going back is that when Moxley and Eddie Kingston went one-on-one for the title 3 weeks ago, I believe it was, on AEW, Eddie Kingston never quit. He passed out whilst in a bulldog choke. So now he will have to quit the match. Oh, sorry. So now Moxley will have to force Eddie Kingston to physically quit to give up the title. That should be a good match. I'm excited for that. Match two, we had Kenny Omega versus Sonny Kiss. And for the first time, we got a bit more of the Omega heel side coming through. He had all, and I mean all, of his accomplishments read out during his entrance. The match itself, Sonny Kiss and Kenny Omega shook hands, went back to their corners. Kenny Omega sprinted out, hit a V-trigger, one win angel. That's it. Good night. 1, 2, 3. This was the squashiest of all squashes. It was good to see. I think one of the complaints people have had with Omega for so long is that he always gives his opponents too much when he's clearly being tried to be put over as the biggest name in AEW. This was just straight up. Kenny Omega, the cleaner, is back. Following that match, we had a promo from Eddie Kingston ahead of the Full Gear match, which was announced earlier in the night. As ever, it's dead good. I won't go into too much detail on it. Just watch it. It's an Eddie Kingston promo. He's very good. Check it out. And then match three, as we finish the first hour, and there's a lot of matches to get through, so I'm not going into too much detail. Otherwise, we'll be here throughout the main show and probably into Friday a little bit as well. This was Penta El Zero versus Rey Fénix. Everyone expected this to be match of the night, and everyone, including myself, was spot on. The story itself was more or less Penta kicking the bejesus out of Rey for about 15 minutes. We had the classic kind of indie start where there's lots of big moves teased. It's very quick. It leads to a stalemate. They go into a chop-off where Kenta gets the better of it. Penta's chops are vicious. We've known this. He does the whole take the glove off gimmick. It was really well done. Some of the notable spots throughout the match. Penta missed a chop to the outside and hit the ring post. Rey then went for a handspring up onto the apron and got super kicked whilst upside down. That was a really cool little spot. I know Cross will have enjoyed this. Rey hits a Lucha Libre-style Spanish fly off the top where he jumps from the middle rope on the outside up to the top rope and then hits the Spanish fly. It's just nonsense. It's Rey being Rey. It's good nonsense stuff. Penta hit a pop-up powerbomb, but it wasn't just a pop-up powerbomb. He popped him up and flipped him a full 360 and then hit the powerbomb. I don't really know how to describe it. I'm sure it's a gif somewhere on Twitter because it is nonsense. Just watch it and you'll see what I mean. The finish itself was Rey winning via a float over Canadian Destroyer, which I don't think anyone really expected. I don't know if I expected Rey or Penta to win. This is kind of one of those ones where you went in with a 50-50 idea. But the finish itself was really, really well done. It's a dead good match. There was a couple of issues here and there. I think where Rey kind of lost his footing a couple of times. But actually, they did a really good job of working it into the match rather than just like hurriedly trying to cover it up, if that makes sense. Really worked, well worked match. Next up, we had Colt Cabana versus Hangman Adam Page. For those who aren't keeping up with AEW, Adam Page is kind of being slow built into being the face of the company, really. It's kind of one of those things you can see from a long way out. He's going through a very interesting story arc at the minute. This match itself is quite a slow start, But I think that was understandable because a lot of it was in, you know, picture in picture, where you have the adverts in one corner and you have the match in a little corner in the bottom. Once the match got going properly, it was really, really good. The story match was that Hangman Page, you could see, was the better wrestler than Colt Cabana. But Colt had a game plan, which was, I'm avoiding the Buckshot Lariat at all costs, and I'm going to try and steal the win throughout. Colt hit a really good comeback, had a couple of near falls that, again, even though we kind of knew what the result was going to be, just for that split second, it made you think, oh, maybe they're going to go with a swerve here. In the end, the finish was Page faked the Buckshot Lariat, which caused Colt to duck. And then as Colt came back up, he hit the flip over the ropes into the big lariat. Really, really good match. It's well worth the watch. Good storytelling. I really enjoyed it. Then we come to what is either the peak of the show or the thing that you're all going to hate the most. Now, this was the Chris Jericho MJF Dinner Debonair. It starts off with them competitively ordering steaks. So this is a steak dinner for two. That is the premise of this section. They've gone for a steak dinner. They start off with them competitively ordering steaks. So MJF starts ordering a well-done 20-ounce porterhouse steak. So Jericho orders a porterhouse steak of 20 ounces cooked mid-well. So MJF orders his to mid. So Jericho changes his to mid-rare, down to rare. And in the end, they end up with blue. They go back and forth. Chris Jericho kind of gives MJF a little bit of shit. And then eventually they break out into a musical number. Now, you might be thinking, oh, what does he mean by this? I mean a full-on 1950s black and white tap dancing musical number. I'm not going to explain this anymore because nothing I say is going to really do it justice. Just go and watch it. You're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. There is no middle ground on it. But I guess the point is you need to watch it, so go watch it. Next match up was Britt Baker versus Kylan King. The way the women's division is being booked at the moment is they're making their stronger competitors look very strong and kind of feeding them the weaker ones as they go along. So we all knew this was going to be a squash and that Britt Baker was going to win strong. It was that, but it was done well enough to not just make it a throwaway match. This is probably the best I've seen Britt Baker look in the ring since she's come back from injury. And I feel like I say this every time I see her compete. She's definitely improving. The women's division, I said this last week, it still needs a hot feud. It needs something to bring it into relevancy. But in terms of the in-ring product that we're getting, it's definitely getting better and definitely getting more traction. And then finally, whew, we've been through a lot. We're into the main event. This was Private Party versus the Young Bucks versus Butcher and the Blade versus the Dark Order, which was Reynolds and Silver, in a fatal four-way tag match. This was a real wild ride. If you like the indie spot fest matches, the tag matches that the Young Bucks are kind of synonymous with, probably unfairly, but it's kind of what they go hand in hand with. You will love this match. It takes a while to get going because there's so many people involved and you kind of have to clear the ring about three or four times to give everyone something to sell so you can get into some more intricate stuff. But it's worth the wait when you get there. Some notable moments, again, I won't go into too much detail because we've all got jobs to get back to. John Silver is a national treasure and should be protected as such. He had a full Cesaro hot tag, which you might remember from a few years back, I think against New Day and Gallows and Anderson, where he ran through everyone. John Silver hit a hot tag like that. It was really, really good. Private Party got a big, big shine in this match. They made it look real strong. They looked like the only team that would actually upset the fairly predictable winners, which was the Young Bucks. Young Bucks won via roll-up. It was a good callback to the match the Young Bucks and Private Party had, must have been a year ago, probably exactly a year ago, in the inaugural tag tournament when Private Party won via roll-up. We see Private Party in a roll-up, looking like they're going to win. I think it's Matt Jackson rolls through, hits a roll-up of his own, which is kicked out at 3.0001 seconds. It's a really, really good spot. After the match, FTR, who were on commentary, come out to share a beer with Young Bucks. Young Bucks slaps the beer away. Out comes a masked timekeeper who hits the Young Bucks with a chair. They hit a three-way spike pile driver onto Nick Jackson, I believe. We take the mask off and, to the shock of zero people, it's Tully Blanchard under the mask. It was a cool ending, although you could see it was Tully Blanchard the whole time because you could see kind of grey hair and it was a bit, they moved like an older person. But it was a very, very cool thing to see. And Tully can still move, in all fairness to him. I don't know how old he is now, but obviously he's been through the ringer a bit. Can still do it. Really, really good way to end the show. Top three moments for me. I start at number three, which is the Eddie Kingston vignette slash promo slash whatever you want to call it for Full Gear. The guy is so good on the mic. Everything sounds really real. I mean, AEW brought Eddie Kingston in for his mic work as opposed to his in-ring work. That's not to say he can't work in the ring, but his mic is his strength. And going into a match where you are 99.99999% certain that Jon Moxley is going to win, I still want to see it because Eddie Kingston just builds it up so well. Number two for me is a John Silver hot tag. What I've written down here, and actually I forgot I wrote this, it's a really good point. He's quickly becoming the Drake Maverick of AEW in that he's very, very entertaining and everything he does, he makes it better. But you don't need to push him to make incredible to give him a reason to be on TV. His entertainment factor is the reason you have him on TV. It's very enjoyable to watch. And number one is the Debonair Dinner. I have no clue if I love it or if I hate it, but if the point of anything you do in a wrestling show is to get eyes on the product, this will be the most watched wrestling video on the internet, bar none. So you may as well just accept that it is good. One match to watch is Penta versus Rey Fénix. As I said, I've given some details earlier. I won't go into too much more because we are short on time. It's very, very good. Find a way of watching it. It's just a dead good match. It is, in my opinion, it's a pay-per-view level match that gave out for free. When we saw the brackets for the tournament, we knew this was going to be the one to watch. It delivered. Going to next week, we have the semifinals of the heavyweight tournament where we have Rey Fénix versus Kenny Omega. That'll be a humdinger. And then we also have Adam Page versus Wardlow. That'll be an interesting match to see. I'm very interested to see the story they tell on that one. We also have the Inner Circle Town Hall for whether MGF should be allowed to join. And then also, something I missed off earlier, an announcement for Full Gear, another match announcement with Sammy Guevara versus Matt Hardy and in an Elite Deletion match. I don't know what that is. I have my nerves after the last time we saw them in a gimmicked match, but I'm going to hope we get something that works out a little bit better than last time. That is your AEW review for the 21st of October. Crush, over to you for NXT.
Thank you very much, Chris. Excellently put throughout there, and I think you did it in great time too. Well done, Chris. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you very much.
We move into NXT, and as we mentioned before, it's the go-home show for Halloween Havoc, which comes live from the Capitol Wrestling Center next Wednesday. Really looking forward to that show. Anyway, first match, Kushida beats Velveteen Dream and Tommaso Ciampa via German suplex. Now, this was a fast start to the show. Kushida's in the ring to start the show. Tommaso Ciampa then attacks Dream during his entrance. Interestingly, Dream is wearing a cast on his left arm, which comes into play later. Back and forth match, there's a lot of hard-hitting moves. There's good offense from all three. All three of these brought their A-game. We had an armbar on Ciampa in the middle of the ring. That was broken up by the Purple Rainmaker. There was like lots of flips and dives to the outside from Kushida. And then we get into the finish, which was an attempted Willow's Bell on Dream by Ciampa. And that's countered by Dream. Ciampa then rolls up Kushida. He then gets kicked out at two, pushed into ropes, as Dream absolutely hammers Ciampa with his cast, knocks him clean out, and Kushida hits a German suplex for the win. A really interesting ending because Kushida's not hitting the hoverboard lock, but also opens the feud up for further down the line. We then get the returning Ember Moon. Obviously, she returned a few weeks ago. This is her second match back. This time, she was facing Jessie Camilla. Hopefully, I pronounced that right. And she won via an interesting submission. So it was a new technical side we've seen from Ember Moon. Obviously, we've seen her with the high-flying moves. She had the eclipse as a finisher. We didn't see really much of that. There was like a moonsault, an occasional bit. But mainly sort of technical offense from Ember Moon. There was good athleticism from both. Jessie Camilla showing what she can do, but as I mentioned, there was a moonsault from Ember Moon. She got a short comeback against Camilla and hit a leg trap crossface to pick up the win. A very interesting submission, and I'm looking forward to see how that sort of develops Ember Moon's moveset going forward, because obviously she had that injury and whether that's affected it. Obviously, the eclipse is a very high-risk manoeuvre as well. Anyway, after the match, Ember Moon's celebrating. She gets tripped up by Dakota Kai, who comes in ringside, and then there's a huge boot into the face of Ember Moon before Dakota Kai says she can't use her to be relevant again. Backstage, drama. It's like an episode of EastEnders. Bobby Fish has been attacked. No one knows who's done it. I just feel like after that moment, it's a dun, dun, da 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 da, and then next week you find out who's going to do it. Anyway, back in the ring, Bronson Reed against Austin Theory. Now, Austin Theory is a very talented superstar, but he's also very cocky, and this was his downfall in this match. There was a bit of back and forth to start the match. Then we go up to the top rope. Theory's trying to do a suplex. He gets pushed off twice before Reed hits the tsunami, which is just a frog splash, really, Chris, isn't it?
Yeah.
So tsunami for the win. After the match, Theory is fuming and demanded a rematch, which he loses within 10 seconds via a Samoan drop. Now, I wasn't sure where they were going with this, because obviously Fury is talented. I think he's only 23. He's been on the main roster. He's come back. He had that great match with Adam Cole. And then now he's done this. So I don't know whether they're going to lead with him into this. But during that commercial, there was a backstage segment and it shows that Austin Fury left the show early saying he quits. So as I say, bit of intrigue about where that's going to go next. Up next, we had a six-man tag match, which was announced earlier in the day. And it was Legado del Fantasma, which is, of course, Santos Escobar, the Cruiserweight champion. Not the real one, because Jordan Devlin is. Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza, and they were facing Isaiah Swerve Scott, Jake Atlas, and Ashanti the Adonis, which obviously stems back to TakeOver when Ashanti the Adonis came out and helped Scott before he went on to lose. So he'll start the match on the outside of the ring, and he tells Mendoza and Wilde to go round so that he can sort of attack him, and Scott does his crazy flipping shit and gets face-to-face with Escobar before fights start out. And Legado del Fantasma are one step ahead of all times. There's a lot of high-flying moves, as we expect with Isaiah Swerve Scott, a lot of back and forth. There's an unreal moment, as Chris mentioned, for that Rey Fénix and Pentagon match, Pentel Zero, should I say. I love a Spanish fly, and this had one. So Joaquin Wilde goes for a dive over the ropes. Atlas is like on the ring apron in front of the announcer's table. As he dives, he turns it into a Spanish fly to take everyone out, and I marked out. It was so good. The finish, Escobar hits a suicide dive on Isaiah Swerve Scott on the outside. Jake Atlas, again, some great offense from him here as he hits a cartwheel DDT on Escobar from the announce table. But then back in the ring, it's a double team from Wilder Mendoza, who hit a leg sweep slash leg lariat on Adonis to pick up the victory for their team. A very good match overall. Next up, and it's fallout from last week, as Ever-Rise faced Killian Dane and Drake Maverick, the Fury and the Furry, as Drake Maverick said last week, in a very short match, but there's a reason why. And from the start, Drake Maverick's getting taunted by Ever-Rise, which obviously plays into last week when Dane saved him from him, and they're absolutely dominating him before he manages to get a tag. He's like picked up and it's almost going for like a German suplex, but like he flips his hand back, gets the tag to Dane, who cleaned house. They hit a comeback, and they've got Killian Dane in like a single leg Boston Crab, I think it is. And one of the other members of Ever-Rise is forcing Drake Maverick to watch. Now this causes Drake Maverick to snap, and I mean snap. And I'm shook off because it's this new side of Drake Maverick. He mentioned, as Chris said in previous episode, that you always need different elements to your character, and he snaps. He gets a steel chair, he slams it into the gut of one of them, he gets in the ring and absolutely bashes him on the back to get a disqualification and Ever-Rise pick up the victory. And afterwards, Killian Dane is shook. He is shook off to the core, and it looks like he's going to punch him, but then he slaps him in the chest and congratulates him. So really nice switch up on their storyline. And yeah, the tag team division needs some good tag teams after events later in this night. So yeah, looking forward to see where they go with this. Next up, as we mentioned, there's drama before. There's more drama now as Roderick Strong is out cold backstage. So we get a segment and it's Breezango, Danny Burch, One Lorcan, William Regal and Kyle O'Reilly. Now Regal says he's promised a match and he wants a match. So O'Reilly's refusing to compete, though. He said he wants to go to the hospital with Roderick Strong. Danny Burch and One Lorcan offer for one of them to be his tag team partner. O'Reilly rejects that, and Breezango versus Danny Burch and One Lorcan is confirmed for the main event. Back in the ring, we've got two more matches for that main event. And the first one is Katie Catanzaro beating Xia Li. Obviously, Xia Li has been so frustrated these past few weeks, and I believe she's got an amateur boxing or kickboxing match this weekend, too, which I saw on Inside the Ropes website. Now, she's really focused in this match as she wants to turn her fortunes around. But Catanzaro is too quick for her. It's a fairly short match and she catches her a quick roll up for the win. After the match, Li ain't having any of it. She attacks both Catanzaro and Caden Carter. And as she's beating someone up in the corner, Raquel Gonzalez comes out, cleans house. She gets on the mic and says she wants to beat the La Diabla of Rhea Ripley's Nightmares at Halloween Havoc. Now, I don't speak Spanish, but that doesn't sound good. So, watch out, Rhea, because Raquel's coming for you. Backstage, another match is added to Halloween Havoc, and it's Cameron Grimes finding out he's going to face Dexter Lumis in a Haunted House of Horror match. Now, obviously, that is not my cup of tea. Like, I was playing Warzone last night, and they've got their Haunted in Verdansk setting now. I opened the supply box. It was late. It was dark. A ghost popped out of me. I am not afraid to say. I shouted and screamed very loud. So Cameron Grimes is feeling like I was last night. And you don't notice, but Dexter Loomis in the background, just staring at him. That'll be a really good match. But that's beside the point. Then we get an in-ring Thatcher's Thatch Can. And Timothy Thatcher is up against his student called Anthony. He's showing off proper leverage of technical submissions. And he's got like, what's the move called, Chris? The arm round the back. Brock Lesnar used to submission.
Oh,
I forgot the name of it.
Oh, I can't get it out of my head. I've got Kira Fuda Clutch in my head, and that's not right.
No.
Brock Lesnar.
This is top class podcast in here.
It is.
What's it called?
Kimura Clutch.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Is it?
Kimura somewhat. Anyway. What Brock Lesnar's submission used to be, he's got that in. Anthony's like tapping out. Thatcher refuses to let go of the hold, and his student gets really annoyed at him. He then annoys him so much that he wants to have a match with Thatcher. Thatcher then gets the match underway and catches him in a half crab for the win. It sort of plays into Timothy Thatcher's character, but I'd like to see him utilised a little bit more. I'm not too sure about you, Chris, but we could talk about that later in the main podcast because we are running out of time, as always. We then get to the main event. Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan against Breezango. And boy, this feels like EastEnders Christmas special because there is more drama to this. And obviously, at the start, Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan very physical, and that style is too much for Breezango to match. Then we get Tyler Breeze managing to target the left leg of Burch. It gives himself a little bit of an opening because obviously he has to slow down. And for that, Breezango is able to mount a comeback. There's a lot of more back and forth. Won't go into too much detail, but it's a good match. Go check it out before we get to the finish. And this is where the drama comes in. This is almost like get out of my pub style and whatnot. A hooded person with a silver mask about 10 days too early for Halloween, comes out and attacks Fandango from behind. And as any other tag team partner would want to do, like if Ryan was attacked in a match for Synergy, Chris will want to find the attacker. Tyler Breeze wants to fight the referee to find the attacker of Fandango. And during that moment, the referee's distracted. Danny Burch low blows Tyler Breeze before an elevated DDT to win the titles. That's right. Former podcast guest Breezango had been defeated for the tag team titles. Shook. And that's not just the end of the drama. The hooded attacker joins him in the ring to celebrate, and he's revealed as Pat McAfee. Wow. I was not expecting that when I woke up this morning and watched NXT. I can tell you that for one. I was shook when I saw this. And then afterwards, he did a promo putting over Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan, saying that they are undisputed. Now, to me, and I've spoke to Chris before about this, it seems that that maybe it could have been Ridge Holland up until his injury, because obviously we've seen him before, or maybe they would have been a four and have a War Games match. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it would have been Ridge Holland and Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, or if it would have been a four. A foursome or a four-way. That's not what I'm aiming for there, but you get it. But however they've done it, though, I really enjoy this. I'm a big Pat McAfee mark. I enjoyed him in the NFL. I enjoyed the show that he does. I've enjoyed him on WWE. So I'm just excited to see him back. However they do this, I think it's going to be really fun. I was going to save this for the main show, but I'll give it out now for free because I'm a nice guy. Something that I'm kind of hoping they do at War Games. We were talking about this earlier. Is it going to be a 4-on-4? I'd quite like it to be a fatal 4-way tag match within War Games. So 4 teams of 2 and people get released throughout as you go along. I think that'd be really fun. It'd be really different. But we'll just have to wait and see. And they can get McAfee involved in some way. He can scale the cage, come in and deliver a shot that gives Lorcan and Burch the win. However they do it, I'm all for this. I think this is just good fun.
Moving into my top 3 moments of the show as we wrap up. Third, I mentioned it in the 6-man tag match. It is the Whacking Wild dive over the ropes into a Spanish fly to take everyone out. It is an excellent move. It's really well done and a really good match overall. Go check that out on NXT's Twitter. Second, Ember Moon's new submission. Obviously, the Eclipse is one of my favourite finishing moves in WWE, so it's really good to see this new side of Ember Moon. And the submission looks like it hurts. I wouldn't like to take one of them. And the top moment is Pat McAfee's return because it completely changes the complex of NXT. There's a brand new element in it. There's a new group to take on Undisputed Era. And I, one, cannot wait to see where this goes. My one match to watch is the opening match of the night, and it's Kushida versus Velveteen Dream versus Tommaso Ciampa, an action-packed match as all three men brought their A game. There's a fast start with Ciampa attacking Dream during his entrance. The cast of Dream on his left arm adds an extra element into it. There's a lot of back and forth, all three men hitting big moves, and the ending with the cast leaves the feud open between all three of them. But I would like to see Kushida versus Ciampa further down the line, because I think they'd be really good together. Summarising the show, Halloween Havoc is taking shape. Obviously, we've got Yoshirai versus Candice LeRae for the NXT Women's Championship, and Johnny Gargano versus Damian Priest for the North American title. And both their matches are spin the wheel, make the deal. Lots of stipulations on that wheel, such as blindfold match, Shotzi's choice, tables, ladders and scares. Really good choice on there, so looking forward to seeing that next Wednesday. Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Gonzalez, Cameron Grimes versus Dexter Lumis in a haunted House of Terror match, and the show stealer, the one that's going to take everyone's five-star reviews, Wade Barrett and Vic Joseph in a costume contest between the announcers. Cannot wait for that. That is all we got time for today. Thanks for listening. Make sure to leave us a review on the podcast if you've enjoyed. Follow us on Twitter at GoHomeShowPod and check us out on YouTube, Sports Wrestling, for all our interviews. Make sure to check out the main podcast as it returns later today and all our reviews, as I mentioned, on all good podcasting apps. And that main podcast is going to be special. It is our Go Home Show for Hell in a Cell, and we have got three special guests. We're joined by NXT UK's Pretty Deadly to talk all things NXT UK and Hell in a Cell. And then we have the legend, the man who features in some of the most famous Hell in a Cell matches ever, the legend that is Mick Foley, will be talking all things Hell in a Cell. Thanks for listening. Let's go home.